It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running for this fifth day of February 2019, a Trumptanic Tuesday. Let's see here. Checking in on the stream. Loud and clear on both streams. Alluding to what I just said, Brother Deacon Asa says, Godspeed, Steve. Your posthumous monotone is just as magnificent. I found out last week that Steve of Titanic Tuesday fame apparently passed away last December, this past. So it's caused some, it's caused me to do some thinking about what we do with Titanic Tuesday. I didn't realize that, but degraded bit rate on White Rose Society, Marty telling me that, and Asa as well. Probably has something to do with the fact that I had to restart the stream about 10 minutes ago. Maybe it'll settle back down. Who knows? we'll see. We'll see if it normalizes. Okay. But the headon.live stream is fan freaking tastic and easy to reach. Thank you very kindly because we do thank yous at the beginning of the program. Thank you very kindly to our fifth day of the month subscribers. That would be Kenda in Missouri. Thank you, Kenda. And Roland in Texas. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to James in Illinois. And thank you to Roberto. Thank you all very, very much for what you do to help keep the horn on the air by way of your kind recurring monthly gifts, and that's very, very much appreciated indeed. Thank you as well to our pal Joy. Thank you very much indeed for jumping in. That means that we're down to 390 to 370. Oh, shoot, there's going to be ciphering involved. 36394. 36394 is what we've got for a fundraising goal this evening. And hopefully it'll work. Hopefully we'll work. Probably had better write that down, hadn't it? No, I don't think I can write with the Tide Stain Stick pen. That one, no. We do a little... Do a lot of word knowing around here, so naturally, anytime you need a pen, there's not one to be found. 36394. Help me remember that. 36394. Okie dokie. Thank you. Thanks, Joy. Thanks a bunch. What's this? That's brilliant. Joy also sent along a comment someone made. You remember? I guess we're going to do this, aren't we? It's State of the Union Tuesday. Wait, let me find it. I'm sorry, I'm scatterbrained. Sparky, by the way, moderating in the chat room this evening and being a Spacing Guild Master, has decided not to fold space and become Man Cave because he says the Man Cave is a refrigerator, Bob. Wow. It is here at the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. It's 72.7 degrees Fahrenheit in the studio today, so that's 2 days in a row now. But based on the complaints that I got last night, out of a sense of abiding modesty, we're not doing naked radio tonight. No, or this evening. No, we're not. We're not. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I didn't do that. I have now. No, instead, out of an abiding sense of modesty, I'm going with a tiny, tiny, tiny Speedo. So, yeah, it's not quite as okay. Yeah, the horror. The horror. Well, there went dinner in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. You'll have that some. But no, we didn't get to the story last night because I get so ever-loving sick and tired of talking about that narcissistic, syphilitic toddler in the White House. But it was kind of... We learned a little bit about what the last several months for Julius Geezer have been. He works about an hour or two a day, and the rest of it is called executive time, which means that he sits around in the residence and watches Fox. No, really. And that leads to what Joy said a minute ago. If someone doesn't start a spray tan business named executive time, I will lose all faith in American capitalism. Please, let it already be in the works. Because that's the other thing we found out. The White House claims that Julius Geezer is orange because of his good genes. The rest of us who are not orange, I suppose, don't have good genes from Oompa Loompas. You know, we were talking about me disappearing in a, being so white I disappear in a snowstorm. Can you imagine what it looks like if Donald Trump walks into an orange grove? Yeah, I don't want to think about it either. No, not even a little bit. But it's State of the Union evening, and listen, I completely understand if you don't want to watch. It'll be kicking up about the time we're leaving air here this evening. And I'll take one for the team and watch it just because, well, I kind of feel like it's my job. It will be a noxious undertaking. By the way, Melanoma Trump has invited a little boy to attend the State of the Union as part of her Be Best messaging campaign. This is again. I've mentioned, the State of the Union and in empires and through the evolution it's not just living things that evolve, institutions, cultures, yeah. For instance, the way that the Mayan civilization is classified by the historians who study it, you know, there's pre-classic, classic, post-classic eras as delineated by the artifactual evidence that they left behind. Well, the same can be said of us, I suppose. Exactly. Monique just pointed out, so Oompa Loompas have the best genes. Precisely. Oompa Loompa Doompa Dee Doo. Yeah. But anyway, when the State of the Union was conceived and made a part of the Constitution of the United States and one of the delineated non-discretionary duties of the first magistrate, the President of the United States, it was envisioned as a, well, kind of like the annual report of a CEO to the shareholders. There was nothing in there about it being delivered as a pomp and circumstance speech. From Jefferson all the way to Woodrow Wilson, nobody delivered State of the Union speeches. It was just a matter of fulfilling the duty of informing the country of how the country was doing. But it became, over the past 100 years, an event. And it's there's more sitting and standing than goes on at a high mass. Up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, clap. Yeah. Perhaps the best representation of its modern form is contained in the movie Idiocracy. And I can tell you for certain that I would far rather... Did you ever think we would get to a point in time where President Alonzo Mountain Dew Camacho in Idiocracy was actually far more articulate than the President of the United States of America in reality? Because here on the fifth day of February 2019, that's where we are. I got the name wrong, by the way. That's President Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho. And just as a reminder of what a real president sounds like, No. But yeah, so there's this, much like The Simpsons, there's something in Idiocracy for everyone. And so, yes, the State of the Union from Idiocracy, featuring President Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho. Coming to you from the House of Representing.
Ladies and gentlemen, President of America! President Camacho!
It's the karate moves and the cobra strike that make it presidential.
Chill out. I know she's barren with all that starving bullshit and the dust storms and we running out of french fries and burrito coverings.
Yeah.
But I got a solution.
That's what you said last time, dipshit.
I got a solution. You're a dick.
South Carolina, what's up?
Brought to you by the NRA.
That's what I thought. Now, I understand everyone's shit's emotional right now, but listen up. I got a 3-point plan to fix everything.
Bring it down, Camacho!
Number one, we got this guy not sure. Number two, he's got a higher IQ than any man alive. And number three, he's gonna fix everything. I give you my word as president. Fix the problems with all the dead crops. He's gonna make them grow again. And that ain't all. I give you my word. He's gonna fix the dust storms too. I give you my word. He's gonna fix the economy.
A
President Camacho stood before the world and promised everyone that Joe would solve all their problems. He would not only end the Dust Bowl and heal the economy, but he would cure acne and car sickness as well. And if he didn't, President Camacho made another promise. He would kick Joe's smart balls all the way up to the roof of his smart mouth, and then he would throw his brainy ass back in jail.
Really? That was entirely more presidential than anything we can expect this evening. But what I was saying earlier, it's all performance art. There's no substance to it whatsoever. The people who are paid millions and millions of dollars to pretend that it is will, they'll sit there and blather away on the various cable networks and be more or less forgiving or complimentary of whatever it is that goes down. There's going to be there will be some pontificating about abortion. Democrats will be accused of supporting the slaughter and then the poaching and slow cooking and I don't know, maybe sous vide cooking of babies. This is pretty tasty. What is it? Baby what? Baby. Yeah. And then there will be the parade of people who are brought for as human stage props for this stylized piece of performance art. Democrats are bringing, one woman has been invited who was an undocumented immigrant who worked for years for Trump Properties, the golf course, a tacky ass golf course in New Jersey, and then when it was discovered that the Trump Organization had a long and skeevy history of hiring undocumented immigrants, well, they fired her and threw her out on the street. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Ron in Raleigh says he's orange because, well, the Oompa Loompa in chief is orange because of his intake of carrots, which, as we all know, are rich in carotene. Oh, carrots are divine. You get a dozen for a dime. It's magic. I see their orange skins and I hear violins. It's magic. Yes. No more singing. What was that? 363.94, if you don't want any more singing. But anyway. So, one of the people... The Trump monsters... You know, the administration that kidnaps children at the border and puts them in concentration camps, they have their own list of people who they've invited, and Julius Geezer will make reference to them. The family of two people who were killed by an undocumented immigrant. Someone else who investigates human trafficking. A former convicted drug trafficker by the name of Alice Johnson, survivors of the Tree of Life Synagogue massacre, a recovering opioid addict, a child who has survived cancer. But then there's this. One of the special guests of Melanoma Trump, the first woman ever to be First Lady of the United States of America, who has a past history of removing her clothing in totality in exchange for money so that photographs of her could be, her naked form could be viewed by people all over the world, all of which are true statements. Well, she's invited a bullying victim. Well, bully for her, I hear you say. Maybe it's a kid who was bullied and tormented every day of his life at school with those hateful sexual epithets that we all know all too well, without having to bother to use, well, without having to use the word. People, maybe a girl who was bullied for seeming too boyish, or a boy who was bullied in school for seeming too effete. That would be good, wouldn't it? That would be, within the stylized format of this dumb show, that would at least carry some meaning. Or, you know, how about maybe it would be a Hispanic kid who gets tormented by the white kids every day with taunts of "Go back to Mexico," or "Yeah, you're going to be screwed once we build the wall." Maybe, you think? Or maybe it's just maybe it could be an African American seventh grader who deals with the same sort of shit that has tormented our nation for centuries. Racial epithets. Any one of those would be good. None of those are going to be there. No. As part of her Be Best campaign, Melanoma Trump has invited a kid named Joshua Trump to attend the State of the Union this evening. Melanoma Trump has invited Joshua Trump because Joshua Trump is a victim of bullying. Because Joshua Trump goes to a school where maybe it's in a part of the country that's not so pro-Trump. Maybe it's not a MAGA state or a MAGA town. Maybe it's not a maggot neighborhood. Right? And so, no, kids bullied because of their gender, kids bullied because of their sexuality, kids bullied because of their race or their ethnicity. No, they didn't get an invitation from Melanoma Trump. Joshua Trump did, because he claims to be bullied because of his last name. Really. Not kidding. Maybe I did meet effeminate. Thank you. Yeah, effete means tired. And I am tired. So, I don't know. Thomas over at FYI says, "But Bob, why you gotta hate on the little boy named Trump? That has to be one big burden. I wouldn't want to be named Tommy Trump or Joshua Trump." Maybe they should pursue a legal name change. I'm not hating on him. Maybe he does get ribbed about his last name. But when you think about the people that got overlooked for that, it's not. Meanwhile, Scott in San Diego says, regarding the State of the Union, "If the news media had any damn guts, ... there'd be at least one TV outlet offering the State of the Union address that features a loud buzzer along with a superimposed he's lying graphic on the screen whenever Trump veers off into terminological inexactitude territory, you know, like those old Joey Zuzu car commercials in the 80s. He's lying." Right. And how much ad revenue comes in from this? Really, this is a serious question. What news value is there in this? Precious damned little, as far as I can tell. Especially with this guy, it's just going to be a catalog of his paranoia and his grievance and his hate and his rage. And he is totally stoked for it. Yeah. So, if you don't watch, I understand. I will. I won't like it. It's another one of those Odysseus lash to the mast kind of moments. Everybody else gets to put beeswax in their ears so they won't hear the song of the sirens. But Odysseus, well, they had to lash him to the mast and because he wanted to hear it. Felt like he needed to. Poor bastard. Well, then again, the sirens was supposed to be, the song of the sirens was supposed to be lovely, wasn't it? That's what enticed sailors onto the rocks. This will not be lovely. This will not be beautiful. Oh, no. No, no. Yuck. Oh, and one other thing about the State of the Union. We know that the official response to the State of the Union will be delivered by recent gubernatorial candidate in Georgia, Democrat Stacey Abrams. I expect she will do a fine job. I've got a little sheet ready if I can find a pen. See the earlier part of the program. I want to, after she delivers her response to the State of the Union, how long will it be before some multimillionaire member of the for-profit media refers to her as, because this is something new that I learned, and I like to use my new knowledge, before some white member of the multimillionaire for-profit media refers to her as either articulate or eloquent or both. Yeah, I think the over-under is at 2.25 minutes. I'm taking the under. Should have taken the under on Super Bowl Sunday, too, but no, it's just too much, too much. Subject line, the Trump clan, Steve in New York. And he says, by the way, pun intended, Trump clan, K-L-A-N. These people are just sickening. The Trump clan has jumped the shark and are gaslighting us in the extreme. Everything about this presidency is a big show and nothing but an exercise in Trump et al. Saying, look at me being wonderful. The he's lying buzzer, it wouldn't be a buzzer. It would just be one long buzz. But here, going back to Stacey Abrams for a minute, A, let's remember she should be the governor of Georgia, but for a racist campaign of voter suppression that went on for years and was perpetrated as Secretary of State by the guy who is now the Republican governor of Georgia. Just a reminder. So there's that. But Stacey Abrams will deliver the Democratic response. I expect it to be a good one. And I'm sorry if this pisses some people off. I'm not trying. But America really doesn't need to hear from Bernie Sanders white-splaining what Stacey Abrams says. Because that's what he's going to do. Bernie announced that he would deliver his own response to the State of the Union because obviously an African American woman considerable determination and talent can't possibly get said the things that Bernie, the old white man, wants to have said. As an old white guy myself, I'm sensitive to this sort of thing. It's absolutely unnecessary. So is every other potential presidential candidate or announced presidential candidate, are they going to... No. Kamala Harris isn't delivering her own personal response to the State of the Union. Neither is Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, Elizabeth Warren. No. Just Bernie. Because Bernie. And that is, I mean, that's just tone deaf. And no. Just no. There's nothing to be gained from it. Steve in New York says, I never, ever thought I'd say this, but Bernie needs to shut the fuck up this time. Although, to his credit, Steve said STFU. Marty says, as a black man, I say let Bernie speak. Well, it's not a matter of let or not let. He's just going to do it because Bernie privilege. Hey, by the way, Flavio advises, don't try to make it a drinking game. Don't want nobody dying from a fucking SOTU. Yeah, it could get bad pretty quick. Yeah, do we have our bingo cards out? Is there one particular? Are we going to count the number of? And this is what I mean when I say that it's a stylized event. There are people who will sit there and count the number of times he says caravan. There are those among us who will sit there and count the number of times he sniffs. Oh, and by the way, as Steven from Georgia Stan points out, if you send Team Trump $5, well, he will scroll your name on the Trump feed. He is literally fundraising off of his State of the Union speech. That's true. Monique says, count the sniffs. Dr. Ronnie, the candy man, is back, you know. Oh, he'll be wired for sound. They're probably even now titrating the rails of Adderall so that he can be in prime form and make it all the way through the harangue. This is a good time to remember that other nickname for him that we have here, the harangutan. Orange and harangues. And there will be some serious haranguing going on this evening. So none of the network, I don't think any of the networks are carrying Bernie's speechifying, but the optics on it are terrible, especially given the problems that Bernie has both relative to women and race. Hey, if Bernie's the Democratic nominee for president, remember, I'm going to vote for him. Because I'm going to vote for the Democratic in November 2020. I'm going to vote for the Democratic nominee for president. I'm not going to go wandering off, following silly Jilly on another sojourn to Columbus that gets her into Cincinnati. Okay, that's true. I'm getting some corrections in. James in Illinois, wait up here. Kamala is doing a pre-buttal. Cory Booker and Kirsten Gillibrand are responding, maybe others, according to Chuck on MTP Daily. Well, let's just all do it then. By all means, let's not let the designated person simply speak in an for all of us. No, let's show how divided we already are. Everybody, sit down. And give the floor to Stacey Abrams. Because I suspect her message is going to be focused on something like, oh, voting rights. Which are, of course, opposed by Republicans, not just Donald Trump, but Republicans generally. Because if everybody gets to vote who is legally entitled to vote, the Republicans pretty much cease to exist. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe the ad hoc horn research department can dig into that, Flavio. Flavio says, I've been meaning to ask, can you OD from Adderall? And I think the answer is yes. At this point in time, the ad hoc horn research department being comprised of Agnes in the next room, who said, yes, yes. And since it's speed, among other things, I imagine it can blow your heart right up. Mm-hmm. Whoa. Jack's playing pretty close to the edge here. Jack in Shreveport says, Trump's orangeness. I'm not sure if this is appropriate, but... If orange is the new black, couldn't we just redline him out of the White House? That might be a case of redlining with which we could all get behind. Yeah. So we got that going for us. And while we were all the focused, I guess that's were on the State of the Union this evening. There was a little something that happened in the Senate. There was a hearing in the Senate. In the Senate Judiciary Committee. Because a really, really, really awful, terrible, bad, very bad, no good nominee to replace Brett Kavanaugh on the D.C. Circuit had her confirmation hearing today and testified. She's never been a judge, but she was nominated in the last Congress and had to be renominated. Her name is Naomi J. Rao, R-A-O, and she is a nightmare. She's what you get from the Federalist Society list. And she has written in her past, of course, she went to Yale or somewhere like that, and because apparently there's an unwritten rule in the Constitution that you can't be on the Supreme Court unless you went to a fucking Ivy League law school. What's that, Marty? Okay, thank you. I will award it. For Jack in Shreveport, according to Marty, cowbell nomination for the Redline Caligulus comment. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Marty. And Jack thanks you, too, I imagine. Naomi J. Rao. Well, that's true, too. Monique says you can OD on aspirin. Any controlled substance can be overdosed on, especially when dealing with a know-it-all like Dolt 45. And that's why I said they got to titrate it. They got to get the dosage just right, and I'm convinced they've been struggling. That's why he's got about 12 hours of executive time every day. Oh, and by the way, they say, oh, no, there's no tanning bed. Nope. It's spray tan. Color like that doesn't come from exposure to light. A tan like that only happens from a can. Tan from a can. Executive Time by Amway. If they do it, Joey, make sure you get royalties. That's yours. Oh, Naomi Rao. Sorry. So when she was going to law school, she wrote these deliberately offensive, hateful, hot takes on the law because that's how you advance your career, by saying things like the Lochner era would be a good thing to go back to, when the Supreme Court would strike down any effort by a state to protect working people from being worked to death by their employers. Good times. Well, she testified today, and Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut asked her what should have been, one would presume, a kind of a gimme. Only it wasn't. We all know what Brown versus Board of Education stood for. The principle that it is unconstitutional to segregate students in public schools based upon race. What's that, Tracy? Tracy says, why we can't have nice things. I take exception with the orange one being referred to as an Oompa Loompa. Because of my wife's diminutive stature, myself, friends, and family call Jan an Oompa Loompa as a term of endearment. So now, as a result of Dolt 45's being called that, I will no longer be able to call her that, because now every time I hear Oompa Loompa, I will see his orange illiterate ass, and that's just not right. Fuck, man. Here's yet another instance where a white man has taken away something away from me. God, I hate that fucker. Love, the former lover of an Oompa Loompa, Tracy. Well, I'm sorry about that, Tracy. You could always try Hobbit. We use that here with one of our children. She'll make a reference to her height, and I will simply respond, yeah, but you're a hobbit. And it works quite well, because there's no stigma attached. Hobbits are nice people. I was always a little suspicious of the Oompa Loompas. A lot of kids disappeared around them. Monique, meanwhile, says, take it back, Tracy, take it back, reclaim it. I'm with Monique on this one. Anyway, back to Naomi Rao. Dude, Jesus, Dill Harris. That woman. Like I said, we all know about Brown versus Board of Education. Here's the funny thing, though. There are actually no kids, and, you know, with the rise of the Klan under Trump and neo-Nazis and whatnot, it comes as no real surprise, I suppose. But there is a school of thought in some legal communities, the Federalist Society, that, no, the free market should have taken care of, should have been left to have taken care of segregation. Yeah, you remember years ago when Rand Paul and that thing on his head, you know, Rand Paul, the libertarian ophthalmologist, told Rachel Maddow that had he been alive back then, he would have voted against the Civil Rights Act because the free market would stop Jim Crow. By the way, if you dig deeply into it, there's a strong link between racism and libertarianism. Just saying. But Brown versus Board of Education. Holy crap. Nobody who is a decent human being says Brown versus Board of Education should be overruled so that the states could go back to segregating school systems. No decent human being says that. It is literally a no-brainer. It is, you could do this theoretically with no brain. Say that, of course, Brown was correctly decided. But not if you are a Republican nominee for an appeals court seat. Not if you're Naomi Rao. Oh, hell no. Senator Blumenthal, underhanded that softball right over the plate in the middle of the sweet spot, and Naomi Rao could have just parked it in the cheap seats. She whiffed.
Let me move to another topic. Do you believe Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided?
Well, Senator, Brown is a really important precedent of the Supreme Court, and one that overturned...
Objection, Your Honor. Non-responsive. He didn't ask her if Brown versus Board of Education was an important case or stood for an important proposition. He simply said, was it correctly decided? And the fact that she hesitates tells us where she is on that. Now, here's the fun part. She's a woman of color. And in a pre-Brown versus Board of Education world, she wouldn't get to go to school with the precious little white children. She'd have to go to a separate but equal school, which the Brown court recognized was a cruel joke, that there's no such thing as separate but equal. That without fail, segregation schools had been unequally maintained because there was never any desire to maintain anything resembling equality in education. Yeah, right. Irish Dave says, come on, Bob. Irish Dave says, free market or tax cuts? Now, that's how racism is, like, you know, ended and shit. Sure. Silent R. Lamar says, oh, please, come on now, Bob. What do we expect from a canned ham but a canned tan? Going back to the, yeah. That's good. That's good. Little jingle for Silent R. It was a, so what's Naomi Rao, who would be subjected to separate but equal education back then? What, it's an important case? What? Yeah, but was it correctly decided?
Do you believe Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided?
Well, Senator, Brown is a really important precedent of the Supreme Court, and one that overturned Plessy versus Ferguson, which, you know, was a real black mark in our history.
So you believe it was correctly decided?
You know, Senator, as a judicial nominee, I think it's not appropriate for me to comment on the correctness of particular precedents. I would faithfully follow them if I'm confirmed.
I may be mistaken, but I think she just said that as a judicial nominee, she would be willing to consider overturning it. There's nothing that says it's incorrect. There's nothing in the canons that says that it would be improper or create the appearance of impropriety for her to answer a simple question about a Supreme Court precedent that has stood for in excess of a half century. and good for her. She paid attention in con law and knows that it overruled Plessy versus Ferguson. Good. As Marty notes, and the remains of Thurgood Marshall start spinning just a little bit faster. How fast did the Tasmanian Devil spin in the old Bugs Bunny cartoons again? Is Justice Marshall's remains spinning that fast yet? Yeah, and probably with something approaching the same temperament, Marty. Irish Dave cuts to cuts through some of the noise. Would she have faithfully followed Plessy versus Ferguson then? Well, according to her, it was a long-standing precedent, and she would, yeah, she said she would faithfully, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that Griswold versus Connecticut was correctly decided?
Again, Senator, that's a precedent of the Supreme Court, which I would follow.
How about Roe v. Wade?
The same thing. It's a long-standing precedent in the Supreme Court, which I would follow if confirmed.
Well, you know, I am struck by someone who has said that you were a victim of discrimination, very unjustly and unjustifiably, and yet you're unwilling to say that Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided.
It's an incredibly important decision of the Supreme Court, but again, it's just...
Well, Plessy versus Ferguson was a very important decision of the Supreme Court,
and
but it was wrong.
And it was overruled by Brown.
So that's why I'm giving you the opportunity to tell us you think Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided.
It's an important and long-standing precedent of the Supreme Court.
It could be overruled, too.
Senator, it's hard for me to imagine any circumstance in which Brown versus Board would be overruled by the Supreme Court.
You don't know that Supreme Court then, do you, Naomi? Don't know much at all about nothing. Because Senator Blumenthal's right. By her own reasoning, if Dred Scott was still the law of the land, she would hold that people of color... what's the quote from the Dred Scott decision? What did Justice Taney write? Something along the lines of, black people have no constitutional rights that white people are obliged to observe. Pretty close, I think. Pretty close. And since it was a precedent of the Supreme Court, she'd follow it. But yeah, she has said that she was a victim of discrimination. And her response there marks her out as a sort of a Clarence Thomas kind of judge. She overcomes discrimination and then starts stomping on the feet or on the hands of the people climbing up the ladder behind her for all she's worth. That, of course, has been the entirety of Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas. Mm-hmm. Not a good look for Naomi. But Naomi will be on the bench because there aren't enough Democrat votes to stop her. And even if there were, you would have to subtract at least one because Joe Manchin will vote to confirm her too. Just a reminder. Tracy says, all I have to say is girl, bye. I wish, and how I wish we could. But she's going to be on the D.C. circuit, the most important. They're all supposed to be equal, but if we're being honest, the most important circuit court in the country. Jesus. A stepping stone, by the way, to the Supreme Court. if she gets through this confirmation process, and she will, and if, God forbid, something should happen to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right there, that woman who you just heard say that she could not and would not state that Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided, that woman will be on the short list to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But here's the wild part. That is far from being the worst thing about Naomi Rao. Far from it. Because, like I said, back in school, she wrote inflammatory stuff that would get her noticed by the wingnut welfare community and make sure that she had a job forevermore. She used she basically wingnut code talking to let them know that she was the kind of law student that they would want to bestow some wingnut welfare on. And so Kamala Harris, being a lawyer herself and apparently having considerable talent at same, asked her about some of her past writings. Now, this woman is going to sit in judgment of cases coming, cases appealed from the district court level to the D.C. Circuit. And, back in college, when she was writing inflammatory stuff, she didn't seem to have much sympathy for victims of rape. Yeah, rape.
Here's an actual situation. I think you responded to something that happened in France.
My bad. This is not Kamala Harris. This is Maisie Hirono, Hawaii.
Where they made dwarf tossing illegal. And I think that you said something like, you know, it's up to them whether this is an individual decision. But why wouldn't it would seem as though your writing about dignitary harm would apply to something like dwarf tossing. Wouldn't it?
Yeah, Senator, thank you for the opportunity to clarify that. Again, it was I wrote about a particular case in France that used different conceptions of dignity. There was a town in France that banned dwarf throwing. There was an individual, Mr. Wackenheim, who made his living doing that, and he said that this ban affected his dignitary interests. But in my article, I don't take a position one way or another on these issues. I'm just pointing out.
I think your article has been interpreted as that you were okay with a dwarf tossing. This is one of the reasons that an organization that supports their issues is very much against your nomination.
Dwarf tossing. Remember what I said about postmodern, postclassic, stylization, form over substance? Dwarf tossing. Holy wow. Now we get around to Kamala Harris and rape.
You said, quote, women should take certain steps to avoid becoming a victim. What steps do you have in mind that women should take to avoid becoming a victim of sexual assault?
Senator, it's just sort of a common sense idea about, for instance, excessive drinking. You know, that was advice that was given to me by my mother.
So that's one step you believe women should take to avoid becoming a victim of sexual assault?
It is just a way to make it less likely. It's not to blame the victim. Rape.
Except that it is. Well, why'd you get raped? You drank too much, didn't you? Ding! That is blaming the victim. That's saying that if a woman has too much to drink, she somehow forfeits the rights to her bodily integrity and is a participant in her own violation. That's sick. That's disgusting. This woman, Naomi Rao, shouldn't be. She shouldn't be allowed to sub for Judge fucking Judy, let alone sit on the D.C. Circuit. Okay, I've learned a new thing. Thank you, Monique. Bob, the community says all skin folk ain't kin folk. Check out Uncle Clarence and Ben Carson. Speaking of Naomi, Monique says her dumb ass wouldn't be eligible for any court. My God, these damn people. How in the hell do they find the most horrible people in this country? It's like a damn evil gift. Well, no, Monique, it's what I said a minute ago. It's code talking, code signaling. You write shit in college and put it in the law review or whatever, and you say that if women don't want to get raped, women need to not drink alcohol. If women, you know, it's like the reverse of the little sign at the amusement park. Your skirt must be this long in order to not get raped. And the multiplicity of dynamics and factors in rape that this ignores, my God, I don't think you can calculate them. Because the converse of what she's saying, don't drink if you don't want to get raped, is that if you do drink, you fucking deserve to be raped. And so when you write this inflammatory bullshit, you put it out there, and then the wingnut welfare organizations say, oh, we've got an up-and-comer. Oh, she's showing real promise. She's got real talent. Yeah.
Rape and sexual assault are horrible crimes, but we're talking about what can you do to keep yourself safe.
Okay, this is a carryover from last night. This is, you know, I've said a lot on a number of occasions that the word believe is the most dangerous word in the English language. And I stand by my assertion. On the other hand, however, the word but is a conjunction. Also, however, a tell. When used by a member of the White Wing, that conjunction will serve as a dead giveaway that something really awful is coming. In yesterday's example, it was the rangy old white dude who said, I ain't a racist, but, and then we knew it was on the way, the proof of the fact that he is a racist. The same thing just happened here. That but inserted in her remarks is a great big screaming tell of where the colloquy was headed, and the hint, not a nice place. Let's go back so we get it.
It is just a way to make it less likely. It's not to blame the victim. Rape and sexual assault are horrible crimes, but we're talking about what can you do to keep yourself safe.
Are there other steps that you believe women should take to avoid becoming a victim of sexual assault?
That is one of the issues that I discussed. I'm not sure if there are others.
So do you believe if a woman does not take those steps that she is at fault or partially at fault for what happens to her?
Let's go back and check out the butt again. Not likely. Yo, quit that.
know, that was advice that was given to me by my mother.
So that's one step you believe women should take to avoid becoming a victim of sexual assault?
It is just a way to make it less likely. It's not to blame the victim. You know, rape and sexual assault are horrible crimes, but we're talking about what can you do to keep yourself safe.
They're horrible crimes, but we're talking about what can you do to keep yourself safe. How about working a little harder to teach men not to rape? How about working harder to teach men to keep their hands to themselves? Maybe? Possibly? Sorta? But we're talking about ways to keep yourself safe. Rape and sexual assault are horrible crimes, but. The word but should never appear after rape and sexual assault are horrible crimes. It's just rape and sexual assault are horrible crimes, period. If you feel compelled to use the word but after that, you're going to have a problem. Because when you say, we're talking about ways to, for women to keep themselves safe, you are tacitly confessing that this country has a problem with violence toward women. By the way, just in case anybody's keeping track of this kind of thing, the Violence Against Women Act was allowed to expire. Just mentioning. It was allowed to expire by Republicans. As Monique says, so the 90-year-old or the 5-year-old should have done something different, I guess. The 3-year-old shouldn't have enticed her father or her uncle. I hate this witch. She's a nightmare. She is a judicial cesspool. Or her philosophies are a cesspool of white-wing judicial activism. And the and her victims will be women, people with disabilities, the non-rich, you know, the people who could never write her a wingnut welfare check. They will be her victims. So, yeah, it's about. So again, skirts all the way down to the ankles. Maybe go back to hoop skirts. Locking devices to keep guys from being able to. Sure, but we're just talking about how women can keep themselves safe.
Are there other steps that you believe women should take to avoid becoming a victim of sexual assault?
That question. Because what Kamala Harris has done there is put the onus on Naomi Rao to explain how it is that women make themselves victims. Because that's the position that she took in writing, that women are responsible for being raped. And once again, I express my profound amazement that there is any woman in the country, white, black, Asian, native, don't matter, who would ever vote for a goddamn Republican. It boggles my mind. And Naomi Rao was not sharp enough to realize that the shiv was all the way in even before she started answering the question. what can women do to keep from being victims?
Horrible crimes, but we're talking about what can you do to keep yourself safe.
Are there other steps that you believe women should take to avoid becoming a victim of sexual assault?
That is one of the issues that I discussed. I'm not sure if there are others.
So do you believe if a woman does not take those steps that she is at fault or partially at fault for what happens to her?
No.
So what is the significance of taking those steps?
Well, I think it's just the significance of trying to avoid becoming a victim of any crime, right? We take different steps to try to protect ourselves from horrible crimes such as rape. And, and I think what we want is for women to not be victims.
So your previous writings on date rape and sexual assault have been mentioned many times in this hearing. They certainly express strong opinions about the subject, and for that reason raise concerns about your current perspective on these issues. You have, for example, in 93 said that, quote, date rape exemplifies the attempts of the nurture feminist to develop an artificial alternative world in which women are free from sexual danger, and no always means no. In your current view, when does no not mean no?
Senator, no means no, and I regret writing that when I was in college.
And you said that a good way for a potential...
Hold on. No means no, and I regret writing that in college. She regrets it. This is another one of those little moments of art of word knowing. There's two words that begin with R-E. I mean, there are a lot of words that begin with R-E. I regret, however, is to feel sadness or sorriness or some sense of unpleasantness about having done something in one's past. I regret. That's what that I regret. I repudiate is an entirely different thing. I regret is just, gee, I'm sorry I did that. I repudiate it is, I'm sorry I said that, and I do not wish to be associated with that line of thought in any way, shape, form, or fashion, and I will go forward in my life trying to make sure that I never behave in that way again. Hint, she only regrets writing it because now she's been caught. She did not, however, repudiate it.
Potential date rape to be avoided is for a woman to stay reasonably sober. You went on to say if a woman drinks to the point where she can no longer choose, well, getting to that point was part of her choice. Do you stand by those comments?
Senator, I was only trying to make the common sense observation about the relationship between drinking and becoming a victim.
Common sense observation, she was only trying. I was only trying. Because the one thing she can't do is say, listen, you know, you've been to law school. It's a jungle. You got to do something to stand out in the crowd, especially if you want to get hooked up with the wingnut welfare organizations and start getting paid real good real fast. I had to write that shit because that's the kind of shit that matters to Republican men who have a lot of money. And I wanted some of it, sister. Boy, won't it be a real hoot the first time an appeal of a rape conviction comes up before her? Well, how was the victim dressed? How much did she drink? Did she drink liquor, or did she drink beer, or did she drink wine? Was she injecting the marijuanas that night? Wow. Just wow.
Senator, no means no. And I regret writing that when I was in college.
And you said that a good way for a potential date rape to be avoided is for a woman to stay reasonably sober. You went on to say if a woman drinks to the point where she can no longer choose, well, getting to that point was part of her choice. Do you stand by those comments?
Senator.
You know, that's the other thing. What if she's not drinking at all? What if the roofie goes in a glass of lemonade or sweet tea? So do you have to backtrack the causal train up to the station and explain that, well, her decision to engage in social behavior was part of her choice? This is so immensely fucked up.
I was only trying to make the common sense observation about the relationship between drinking and becoming a victim.
So I'm concerned about your current views. Do you stand by those comments?
I do not, and I would not express myself that way today.
Okay.
Or at least that's what she says. She would not express herself that way today. She would express herself a different way today. But that does not necessarily mean that the way she would express herself today is any different. It is merely a matter of form over substance. Wow. I'll tell you what. Let's take a little break. Lines are open. If you want to jump in, the stress line's open. 844-843-4676, 844 the horn. We've got a call on hold over on the other line, so it is, however, Tuesday, and maybe we can let's see what Brad and Desi are up to, shall we? By the way, we are still right there where we were, $363.94 to go in fundraising for this first full week of February 2019, 363.94. And thanks to Joy for knocking it down a peg keeping it from being at 390. Thanks very much indeed. Green News Report, what's up?
It's Tuesday, February 5, 2019.
We've seen helicopters that are constantly checking for people who are there trying to pluck them to safety.
From hellish heat to unprecedented flooding, Australia hit with extreme weather whiplash.
David Bernhardt, acting Secretary of the Interior, will be nominated as Secretary of the Interior.
Meet the new Interior boss, even worse than the old Interior boss. Polar vortex forces nuclear plant to shut down. Plus, Trump administration preparing to bulldoze National Butterfly Sanctuary to make way for his border wall.
The Wrecking Crew continues. All of that bulldozing and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
If you're in the polar vortex, how are you going to stay warm? With solar panels?
Yes, with solar panels. They work just as well in the cold as they do in the heat. That's why they use them in space, where it's very cold. Jesse Waters of Fox News, you're an idiot. But this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you just go right ahead because I'm over here fuming about how stupid Jesse Waters is on Fox News. You've got more important things to talk about.
Yes, well, first up, Australia is whipsawing in weather whiplash from historic hellish heat waves breaking all-time records over the last few weeks across the entire continent to now grappling with record flooding. The Australian Army evacuated thousands in the city of Townsville in Queensland after it was deluged with more than a year's worth of rain in only 9 days.
Wow.
That caused widespread flooding and officials warning folks to stay out of the water due to crocodiles and snakes in the streets. Literally. January was the hottest month ever recorded in Australia. A preliminary computer model analysis indicates the heat extremes would not have occurred without a climate change kick to the system. Here in the U.S., the extreme cold temperatures brought by the latest breakdown of the polar vortex seriously tested the resilience of the U.S. electric grid, knocking out power in several states. The extreme temperatures also triggered a shutdown of one of two nuclear reactors at a power plant in New Jersey because ice accumulated on the intake screens that filter out debris from the Delaware River, which was crucial to keeping the reactor cool.
Too bad they were using nuclear. If they were using solar, they would have all had power. Am I right, Jesse Waters?
Utility Dive reports that the plant's shutdown comes literally the day after the utility CEO asked state regulators to approve nearly $1 billion in rate hikes and new subsidies to reflect the resiliency of, quote, fuel-secure nuclear electricity generation.
But not cold-secure, apparently.
Nope. Another big ice melt. There's a new massive cavity underneath a major Antarctic glacier that's about two-thirds the size of the island of Manhattan and nearly as tall. That's according to satellite measurements from NASA. Warming ocean waters are eroding the underside of the vulnerable Thwaites Glacier from below. The Thwaites Glacier acts like a doorstop, holding back the rest of the Antarctic ice sheet from flowing faster into the ocean. In the wake of these extremes, if it seems like these climate change impacts are arriving sooner than predicted, you're right, according to Dr. Michael Mann in a BBC interview.
When we look at the melting of the ice sheets, it's happening faster than we predicted. That means that water is going off into the ocean, contributing to sea level rise faster than we expected. The sea ice in the Arctic is warming faster, giving us even more warming in the Arctic because you lose the reflecting properties of that sea ice, so the oceans can warm even more.
Fantastic.
In politics, President Trump has announced in a tweet that he has nominated Acting Interior Secretary David Bernhardt to permanently take over the agency after the resignation of scandal-plagued former Secretary Ryan Zinke. Bernhardt lobbied the government for years on behalf of the oil and gas industry. Green groups universally condemned the nomination. In a statement, Earth Justice said, quote, Bernhardt's client roster reads like a who's who of the worst corporate polluters in the United States, from Taylor Energy to Halliburton. The Senate should reject this industry-sponsored hack.
So this industry-sponsored hack was an oil lobbyist, and he's now set to run Interior. And over at the EPA, we have a coal lobbyist who is now running that agency.
That's right. Bernhardt may not be as flashy as Zinke, but he could potentially be more effective.
Swamp drained.
Finally, the Trump administration is now preparing to bulldoze the National Butterfly Sanctuary in South Texas for construction of Trump's border wall on federally owned land using existing funding approved by Congress last year. Conservationists say the wall will harm numerous species. U.S. Customs and Border Protection maps show the proposed wall will cut through the Butterfly Sanctuary, the Lower Rio Grande Valley National Wildlife Refuge, a state park, and a 150-year-old Catholic chapel on the river. The Department of Homeland Security has waived all environmental regulations that could possibly stop construction of a border wall.
Can't we just bulldoze the Trump administration?
I wish we could.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't stomach, get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. See the dog
and butterfly. Yeah, butterfly. What kind of sick ass political party bulldozes butterflies? Butterflies. Yeah. Butterflies. As for Naomi Rao, yeah. Monique says, not well, to throw your words back at you. Typical right wing, right? She was halfway to, Monique said she was halfway to leading up to Dana Loesch gun carry. Brother Deacon Asa said, I'm hearing it a different way, Bob. She said she regrets writing it, as in, I still believe it, but I shouldn't have put it in writing to cause myself all this headache. What's the phrase? Por qué no los dos? I think we can have our cake and eat it too in this instance. Uh, Mr. Kincaid, it has come to my attention that a sadist fascist practitioner of law is positioned to be a Supreme Court justice. Is this true or not? Signed, Stuffed Pork Loin, Barbecue Todd. She's already said to be on the short list if Trump gets to appoint a successor to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Live long and prosper, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Live long and prosper. Jesus. And Monique also brought up the issue of what did the comatose woman in Arizona do? You know, the comatose woman in Arizona who was raped, became pregnant, and gave birth in a coma. What did she not do that would otherwise have kept her safe, Naomi Rao? Huh? What? Yeah. Okay, let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
You always do that. I was taking a
had a mouthful, didn't you?
I had a big old mouthful.
I don't have many special powers, but that's one of them.
There you go. And luckily, I swallowed it down before I went through my nose. I hate when coffee goes through, especially if it's hot coffee, goes through my nose. Jesus. Yesterday's program, Bob, was stellar. And I tried to get in. I was out and about doing errands, dodging the raindrops. And, man, what a show. The Bob, Todd, and Tracy extravaganza.
It felt like one for the ages.
Yeah. By the way, if you got your Cyphron crayon nearby, put me down for 10. I'll send it in via the USPS.
Okay, so that takes us to 353.94.
There you go. There you go. And I'm going to be out and about again tomorrow or day after tomorrow, so I'll swing by the post office. And, well, that's where that expression came from. I'll get it to you post-haste. So, good Lord, I wish you could see this weather map, this radar weather map. I think we've had 5 major winter storms, our version of winter storms, come through here in the last 8 or 10 days. And there's another one on the way. Woo-wee. And I know the people back east and in the north and the Midwest just laugh whenever I talk about cold weather or, quote, winter, close quote, out here in California. But it's a real thing. I mean, it's just a different real thing. But, oh.
Brutal, huh? You actually had to take a flannel shirt out of the closet and look at it for 15 minutes. Is that what you're saying?
No, I've got my long underwear shirt on with a T-shirt over top of it because I keep my wireless headphone gizmo in my shirt pocket so I can walk around the property, you know, and not lose my audio, you know, whether it's music or the TV or whatever. And crank that puppy up so I don't disturb the neighbors if I'm listening to my tunes. But that's not why I called.
No, of course not.
Last night, with all this talk about... Let me touch upon the judge.
I wouldn't if I were you, but, you know, you might...
Verbally.
Okay.
Verbally. You talk about words starting with R-E. Mm-hmm. I think the operative word that she needed to employ is repent. She's probably a thumper of some sort, I would guess. She's a religious fanatic. I mean, you can't get in good with the moneyed right wing without, you know, thumping a little bit. Repent. Turn around 80 degrees, 180 degrees. And don't do one of those typical GOP repents where you turn around 360 degrees and you're still facing the way you were going to begin with. Do a 180 on some of these beliefs and practices and hopes and dreams and wishes, but that's not going to change anything. I mean, like you say, the D.C. is it which court in D.C.? It's the not Superior. Is it Superior that she's up for?
No, the D.C. Circuit.
Circuit, I mean. I get my superiors and circuits all
Yeah, the federal system, there are federal magistrates, federal district judges, and the district judges are the trial court judges. Then there's an intermediate level of appeal, and that's the circuit, Then you go to the Supreme Court.
Okay. But, I mean, it's like the warm-up act. I think more associate justices of the Supreme Court have come from the D.C. circuit in recent times.
Alito came from a different circuit. He was up in Jersey, I think. The reason the D.C. circuit's so important, Scott, is because, for instance, Congress passes a law.
Yeah.
President signs it into law. Somebody's aggrieved by it. Quite often, it'll be heard in the D.C. circuit. It's almost like a circuit for whose jurisdiction encompasses the government.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I didn't mean Alito. I meant Fat Tony Scalia. Scalia.
Fat Dead Tony, yes.
Yeah, Fat Dead Tony. But anyway, I wanted to get in yesterday because you were talking about my home state, the Commonwealth of Virginia.
The Old Dominion, yes.
And poor old Ralph. I don't know about Ralph.
Regardless of the situation, he's still got to go. But I'm utterly convinced now that this... He was the warm-up act for what they really, really thought was going to be a humdinger once Justin Fairfax became governor.
Yeah. And it seems to me, isn't there, maybe I'm mixing it up with another recent statewide administration in Virginia, but isn't there a Republican somewhere in the food chain, we know that Northam and Fairfax are both Democrats, and I think what is the technology involved with replacing a governor and a lieutenant governor if they both should have to move on?
I absolutely do not know.
Is there a new election, or is it like the federal system where the next in line in terms?
Yeah, I'm sure there is some sort of statutory scheme or perhaps even state constitutional scheme for the succession in Virginia. But you know, because we've got 50 petty kingdoms, fiefdoms, there are probably 50 different schemes. For instance, West Virginia.
No, go ahead.
West Virginia has no lieutenant governor.
I never knew that.
And we never really had one. Never needed one. But when Joe Manchin got the itch to become a senator when Robert C. Byrd shuffled off this mortal coil, we suddenly found ourselves needing a governor, and lo and behold, it turned out to be the president of the West Virginia State Senate, a guy at the time, a fellow by the name of Earl Ray Tomlin. And so the president of the West Virginia Senate became governor when Manchin went off to go and be a senator.
But what I mean is it like written into the business that if the governor goes, the president of the Senate automatically steps in? I mean, in your state.
It sort of was, but it wasn't clear. But that's the way we played it.
Well, however, my
the question is he acting governor or is he governor?
Yeah.
And that is a question that has deviled this system on the federal level, too, because up until passage of the 25th Amendment, it was not clear if in the case of a disability, guy became president or acting president. One of the reasons that Thomas Riley Marshall, who was Woodrow Wilson's vice president, would not step in and take the reins is because he said he had no constitutional authority to so act.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, in modern situations, for instance, when a president has to be knocked out to get a colonoscopy, this has happened. There is a succession letter that is authored that says that the vice president is acting president until such time as the drugs wear off. But on the other hand, if a president dies in office, then that person becomes straight up president by operation of the 25th Amendment, which was meant to clear this all up.
Well, the thing that troubles me, Bob, and I haven't lived in Virginia since like 82, but I grew up there from 54 to 82. I was a proud Virginian. And in my lifetime, I've seen a lot of bizarre things happen in my state. But on the other hand, I've seen a lot of change occur in terms of making actual progress, taking us out of, I mean, after all, it was the cradle of the Confederacy.
Well, but really, that's not true.
Well, no, it is true. I mean,
it became the capital of the Confederacy, but that was because of other Southern states wanting to keep Virginia in the fold. Virginia actually dithered for a considerably longer time about seceding than did, say, South Carolina or Alabama or Mississippi. The first capital of the Confederacy was actually that structure that is not so lovingly known as Goat Hill in Montgomery, Alabama. And they've still got a star on the damn portico where Jefferson Davis took the oath of office to be the president of the Confederate States of America. But they moved the capital to Virginia as a sweetener to make Virginia more amenable to secession. One wonders how sweet they felt about it when it was in ashes because it was the Confederate capital, but that's another matter.
Yeah. No, I didn't. Cradle of the Confederacy is the wrong word. Once they figured out the order of things, that's where the capital of the Confederacy eventually landed. And you can look around.
And it's where a great deal of the Civil War was fought.
Yeah. But I just, you know, given whatever progress Virginia has made in my lifetime, I would very much like to see them get this worked out, hopefully quickly, but hopefully responsibly. Because when one of these right-wing hit jobs is undertaken, I know that the ones on the right automatically buy in lock, stock, and barrel to whatever the hit piece says about the Democrat. And it's always about the Democrat, because that's what they do. I would like to see that before any drastic steps are taken that are going to fuck things up further, that we get to the reality and the truth of things. In other words, don't see, this is what troubles me about they frankened Ralph Northam, I think. And I know that's not a.
Well, no, what they did is they acorned him. But the problem is, they just happened to have something that was damn near irrefutable, because as was pointed out to such great clarity last night, mm-hmm. Even if that's not him in that photo, he is still Coon Man at VMI and apparently knows that there are things in his past that involve him being in blackface.
Yeah, well, and see, that's the thing. I mean, granted, and for lack of, I'm putting down some food for the cat because she was hungry. But I've done that now. granted, there's something in his past that in today's world is abhorrent to anybody with a brain, anybody with eyes and a knowledge of anything knows that whatever he did in the 80s or before or after, that was not wise, okay? And then the thing got compounded because of the timing and the source of the report, and it got further compounded that Northam has not handled this at all well. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to get stuck on that aspect. I just want to give some context about the state of Virginia, because have you ever been to a minstrel show?
No.
How many years did you spend in Alabama?
I grew up there.
Yeah, but I mean, did you leave in your 20s?
I left and I came back and left again.
Okay. The reason I bring that up, the people on TV, the pundits and all, when the subject of blackface came into the conversation, the topic of minstrel shows also came up. Because that at one time was a popular worldwide entertainment form, and not in just in this country, but so I did some and by the way, I have actually been to a minstrel show. I thought for sure that would be something that we had in common growing up where you did.
I mean, there were. It depends on the definition. I never went to any acts that had people performing in blackface.
Okay, all right. And you might say, well,
variety entertainment, singing, dancing, joke telling.
I'm talking about a blackface, costumed, scripted.
No.
Bonafide minstrel.
No.
All right. Well, I'm surprised.
I mean, from a television perspective, there's an argument to be made that, like, Hee Haw was a minstrel show with hillbillies and rednecks being the vehicle of the humor, as opposed to a person in blackface.
Yeah, I'll buy that completely. But you might say, now Scott, you're not that old. See, I knew you would say it. You were born in the mid-50s. Okay, you were in Northern Virginia. You grew up 4 miles south of the nation's capital. How can these things be? How could, in that environment, how could there possibly have been minstrel shows? You've heard of the JCs, the social.
Oh yeah, the Civitans, JCs, Kiwanis, yeah.
Yeah, I believe JC's is an acronym or a funny spelling for Junior Chamber, as in Junior Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
Okay. In the 60s, up until around 66 or thereabouts, there was an annual minstrel show put on and performed by the Alexandria, Virginia JC's. And it took place in the auditorium of the George Washington High School. Back in those days, it was still a high school, several blocks from where I grew up. Some of our neighbors, who were business people, were in the JCs and performed in the damn minstrel show. In times past, we have talked about my younger brother, who is a very far-right reactionary, Mark Levin-loving, gun-toting nut job, okay? I remember he went to a matinee with me and my younger sister to one of the last shows, minstrel shows, and freaked out at the sight of what he perceived to be black people. Now, there's something telling about that. Mid-60s, he couldn't have been more than 5 or 6 years old. Just freaked out. tears, crying, screaming, everything. To the point that one of the ladies, Mrs. Smith, who lived around the corner, whose husband was in the show, was helping prepare the men for the performance, came out, and she had a lot of black grease paint on her hand, and showed her, said to my brother, look, it's just makeup, it's stage makeup. Whereupon, seeing her black hands, he freaked the fuck out. And my younger sister ended up taking him home because, you know, there was no consoling him. And I've often wondered, you know how the mind works. One wonders how people get the way that they are in adulthood, with hang-ups and phobias and fears and willingness to buy into political nonsense. One wonders what his hang-up is and what prompted him to go into a field of endeavor professionally that had to do with law enforcement. One wonders indeed, at least I did. But one of the purveyors of minstrelsy was a guy named James Bland, who was born in like 1854 and died in 1911, and he was world famous. He toured the world with minstrel shows back in the day, performing up to and including for Queen Victoria. So he was, you know, he was on the upper echelons of entertainment, and wrote songs like "O Dem Golden Slippers," which the Mummers in Philadelphia sing. It's like their official theme song, and "Carry Me Back to Old Virginia," which was the official state song.
Well, do you know where the term Jim Crow comes from?
No, tell me. I think I know, but go ahead and say so anyway.
It is literally a character from minstrelsy.
Yeah. Okay. I thought
created
by a
white performer, and accompanied by a song called "Jump Jim Crow."
Yeah.
And but the thing is, it was recognized in the 19th century. This isn't so much of the epithetery, if we can use that, comes directly from minstrelsy. And it was not okay in the 19th century either. You know, one of the things that, well, you know, that's just how the South was. No, it wasn't. Frederick Douglass himself described described minstrelsy as, he referred to blackface performers, white people in blackface, as, quote, the filthy scum of white society who have stolen from us a complexion denied them by nature in which to make money and pander to the corrupt taste of their white fellow citizens.
Well, what is to be said of James Bland, who wrote songs that were used in that form of entertainment? Now, I don't know for sure whether... I'm sure that he didn't have white performers in blackface. I think he had black performers in blackface.
There were African-American performers who toured under the control and management of white people. But the vast majority were white people in blackface.
Yeah,
if it was comic, it was a comedy of the low and the hard and the mean. And it was comedy because it reinforced the hateful stereotypes that were prevalent in the age.
It went from a form of entertainment, which was widely practiced, into a weaponized...
Oh, it was weaponized. No, I would say it was weaponized from jump.
Well, I can't... Here's... Now, again, are you talking about people like Bland, who was a Howard University-educated man in the Songwriting Hall of Fame? Or are you talking about the later incarnation?
I'm talking about from the minute it began.
In the 1800s.
In the early 1800s.
Well, I don't know that I can go along with you on that. I think at one time it was a form of entertainment, a low entertainment, okay? Just as hee-haw was not sophisticated comedy, okay?
I mean, you can even drill down into it, and this may shock you, but there is a school of thought that even says that Mickey Mouse arises out of a racist tradition of minstrelsy. And if you look at
really?
The way he is drawn, the white gloves, the black arms, the exaggerated facial characteristics. Steamboat Willie, the first animated short.
Mm-hmm.
Incorporates a lot of it. And in fact, Mickey behaves in a minstrel show fashion in that short. And as you go along, you'll see, Bugs Bunny in blackface. And there are blackface characters in Walt Disney, beloved Walt Disney animation.
Oh, there used to be cartoons on TV that we'd watch growing up. I'm thinking Max Fleischer, I believe was his name, who did the Popeye cartoons, but also did a number of very strange cartoons with stereotypical stuff. Even Warner Brothers. I love Warner Brothers cartoons, but even Warner Brothers, there are a collection of I think you can get them on home video, the ones that were later banned in terms of TV airings. I guess what I'm saying is it's a very complicated thing, and I grew up around it in the sense that, you know, you remember me talking about the film Remember the Titans?
Hold on, Scott, because I don't want us to get lost here. The art form itself was suffused in bigotry. But we're not talking about an art form here. We're talking about people who dress this way as a costume. I mean, remember last Halloween when the guy and somebody mentioned it in a communication a few nights ago, when the guy dressed up his kid as fucking Hitler.
Yeah, well, we're not talking about Hitler. I'm trying.
No, but we kind of are.
The controversy is about the actions or inactions or mishandling, all combined into one, of a sitting governor of an American state, and the brouhaha that has come out of that. And I'm trying to say, not to justify anything the man did, but trying to say, as a son of Virginia, hell, three doors up from where I grew up, there was a man who was a member of the Sons of the fucking Confederacy and flew the fucking stars and bars.
Absolutely.
In a flagpole in his front yard and left the neighborhood when on the next block up in the late 60s, a black family moved in. That was too damn close for comfort for that fellow.
I lived it.
Well, I know you, above all people, growing up in Alabama, know this better than me. But I'm just keeping it centered on Virginia and this current issue because it's a very complicated situation on one level because these things die slowly.
I know, but the point that I was trying to make earlier is that if you walk around, if you even show up to a party in a Klan costume, mm-hmm. that says something about your character.
Yeah.
And it says a bad thing about your character.
Oh, and by the way, I don't mean to yell at you, Bob. I mean, I'm
No. I know, but
seriously troubled. It hurts me that in the year 2019, that we've got a sitting governor. from my home state, who seemed to be on the right track, but now, the lieutenant governor may or may not have issues of his own, and I understand the political nature of this. They're desperate. They'll try to throw a wrench into any mechanism they can to bring right wingers back into power, as if they need more fucking power. It just makes me sad. It troubles me. It outrages me that we are where we are here. And I was just trying to say that we can't judge everybody in the Commonwealth of Virginia on the basis of the stupidity currently or previously by even a sitting governor. There have been things, and you talk about yearbooks. I mean, I went to an all boys Catholic high school my first 2 years in high school, and in the back, where there's advertising for the people who underwrite the cost of the yearbook. I wasn't on the staff, but they asked me if I would be in some photographs to be used in advertisements. And then they would have a little biographical thing about me and also why I liked the company that had paid for the ad. Like, there was a steakhouse in D.C. called Blackie's House of Beef. Had the best fucking steaks you'd ever want to eat. And it was a picture of me opening the door, presumably to go in and have a steak. And they mentioned that while my older brother, who had attended the same high school, had torn up the turf, the gridiron, during his years at the school, I took a different way. I took a more cerebral way. I pondered stuff, but I was also active. And one of the things that they mentioned that I was active in my little old hometown, every Saturday for a while, we would go down to the major intersection downtown and picket the cab stand, because there were two main cab companies, Yellow and Diamond, neither of which would hire black drivers. And in like 1968, 1969, that showed up for me and a bunch of other people as wrong. And we picketed and picketed and picketed for several months, and they ended up hiring back black drivers. Prior to that, believe it or not, in that era, there was Diamond and Yellow, but there was also King Cab, which is a black-owned company that had black drivers. And more often than not, if you were a person who wanted to go somewhere and you were black, you'd call King Cab, because you didn't know what kind of ride you were going to get from the white-owned cab company. Little things. I mean, and I was going to allude to Remember the Titans, which tells another chapter in my hometown's history. Was it a big thing that we won the state football championship as a result of the high schools being integrated at long last in 71, 72? I don't know if it's a big thing that we won the state football championship, but it was a big thing that finally someone stepped in and said, look, at the risk of our school system losing federal funding because of the racial inequities, they finally came up with a plan. And a lot of people didn't like it, but it worked out okay in the sense that it brought black and white people together. And it had the benefit also of something that we could rally around in terms of the football team. And like I said, I don't mean to yell at you. I'm just trying to bring a little hope into it, and I know I'm the eternal optimist, but
I hear what you're saying, but I don't think there's a way where Northam comes out of this okay.
No, I don't think there is either.
He has lately said, I'm not going to resign and spend the rest of my life being called a racist. Well, I think he's going to be called that whether he resigns or not. Maybe that's one of the points that's lost on him.
I think what his hesitation is, that's part of it. But I think another part of it is he doesn't want to give the other side the kind of opportunity that they would get if he just simply shuffles off, okay? And I can see a case for him shuffling off, but I can also see a case for him saying, you know, not so fast, motherfuckers. We're not going to – just because you run a sleazy article in your sleazy right-wing literature online doesn't mean that I'm going to react the way that you want to. And with the deal with Fairfax, the lieutenant governor, I'm glad to see the – you know, on the A-team, they used to say, I love it when a plan comes together. Well, I love it when a GOP plan – goes straight to hell.
Let's broaden the focus a little bit here, because it's kind of funny how I say things on this little bitty program, and it takes two or three days for it to percolate, and then son of a gun, it happens. I've been saying that it would be nice if some real journalism was done on this, that looks more broadly at the issue. And so now a third-party independent review is going to be performed of all of the yearbooks of Eastern Virginia Medical School.
Good.
President and Provost Richard V. Homan, H-O-M-A-N, commented today and said, there's been a pattern, talking about images in the yearbooks. There's been a pattern. Some are repugnant. Some are unprofessional. Some are shockingly abhorrent, like I mentioned. So they're all getting reviewed. But here's the thing. In the Northam instance, we're talking about, and if there are people out there who are trying to make any sort of an excuse for this, A, don't do that. B, they tend to say, well, you know, it was 1984. Just like Megyn Kelly said, I had no idea blackface wasn't okay from when I was growing up. Well, sister... Mm-hmm. You weren't growing up in 1855. You were growing up in the 1970s, because she's a little bit younger than me.
Where's she from? I mean, where did she grow up?
I don't recall offhand. But let's persist here. So the saying, thinking goes, well, it was 1984, it's Virginia, you know, it's going to take a while to erase all of this. Bullshit. It was 1984. But here's the thing, there are apparently inappropriate images in the 2013 Eastern yearbook? Virginia Medical School yearbook.
Damn.
And what, and he said, the investigation will be fully independent, it will not be restricted in scope, it will be fully transparent, we are committed to finding the truth. And he said, apologizing to the African-American community, President and Provost Homan said, the emotional wounds they endure are enormous. I do not need a report to know this situation was the ultimate responsibility of our institution, EVMS, and not our students. And another question has been answered, Scott, and that is, no, it was not some outside third party that came in and did the yearbook. They had a yearbook staff.
Well, I see that I wrote yesterday and said I would be amazed if there were not a school, a student run with a faculty supervisor, a yearbook staff. I don't know of any yearbook that is not done that way.
And so the question becomes one of if we want to broaden the inquiry. It appears that 1984 was a pretty nasty year at EVMS. The page 10 of the yearbook, where there's a man in drag, wearing pearls, a black wig, and black face, and it's captioned, Baby Love, Whoever Thought Diana Ross Would Make It to Medical School.
Wonderful. Well, and let's remember, in 1984, people were surprised that that kind of thing was going on. Well, Reagan gave them cover. Where did Reagan go to kick off his presidential run in 1980?
Oh, Neshoba County, Mississippi, home of the Klan. So in that, on that same yearbook, there's a in the personal pages, the page before you get to Ralph Northam's, shows three guys in blackface wearing, again, drag, dresses, white gloves, pearls, and wigs. There's no commentary on it. And then on page 34, in regard to pharmacology, there's a picture of a guy. There's no makeup involved or anything, but he's just holding a coffee mug, and on the mug it says, "We can't get fired. Slaves have to be sold."
Damn.
Page 10, a photo of a man groping a mannequin, captioned, "I try never to divulge my true feelings while examining my patients."
And these are the fucking doctors of tomorrow.
Yes.
Who are going to school to... Well, it sounds like a rinky-dink college to begin with. I mean, I don't know anything about it other than, you know, it's in Virginia and that's where Northam, and apparently the faculty supervisor on the yearbook staff was either in on it or drunk or something. I mean, to let that stuff go by, I mean, I don't recall it being that blatant and that ordinary, even under the guise of, college hijinks.
Yeah, I wouldn't use that term, but the thing is, there are things that go on in closely knit groups that don't necessarily make it onto Main Street. I mean, when I started college, there was a fraternity on campus named Kappa Alpha, and they flew the Confederate battle flag. Their big party every year was the so-called Old South Ball, where where all the women show up in hoop skirts and the men show up in Confederate fucking uniforms.
Jeez.
Now that is
crazy.
That is 1982. And around the corner, my fraternity painted ourselves purple and ran around in grass skirts. I didn't. But, yeah. And in both instances, I think both the Kappa Alpha and Phi Gamma Delta have issued formal policy statements saying this is not approved of and we will not countenance it, and quit. Stop it. But in something in a place like VMI, where it's, hell had to be raised just to get a woman admitted to that school, just like the Citadel.
Yeah.
And they to this day, what I'm talking about when I say the military uniform of the War of 1812 era? Brass buttons down both sides of the tunic.
Yeah.
Gray. They dress that's the dress uniform of a VMI cadet. And what they say in their closed groups is far from the way they behave in public. Presumably, Ralph Northam's mama and daddy would have been sickened if they had seen that was his behavior. But then again, to expand this, I think the people in the photos, the other people in the photos,
mm-hmm.
they're probably right worried too, because those are probably respected doctors and members of the community now. And yeah, Monique asks, wasn't it VMI where that Coon Man name was bestowed on him? It is exactly where it was.
Yeah. And what was the attendance, student population of that school? Because until all this happened, I'd never heard of it. I mean,
I had never heard of Eastern Virginia Medical School either.
I mean, because the reason I want to find the number of students enrolled there, and now, based on the revelations of other instances of this sort in the fucking same yearbook, the word pervasive comes to mind.
Yes.
You know, and then you zoom out a bit, move the clock forward to 2019, 2018, 2017, 2016, 2015, and, you know, our demented circus peanut in chief, who will be addressing the nation and the world tonight, supposedly, to talk about working together, fat chance, he's lying on the screen. Have we moved an inch in any progressive way in this country? I mean, I look at this 30-some years ago. I look at where we are now and Charlottesville, again, in my home state. I look at Trump. I look at the Senate packing the court as fast as they can on the federal level that will keep meaningful change from occurring in this country. I'll be dead and gone before they get then new judges in. You know, this is generational, Bob. The madness will continue. The sickness will continue.
Well, and I think Ron speaks eloquently. No, not eloquently. Ron speaks well to the point. Query, in 2015, the Republican legislature of North Carolina passed a law that forbade the removal of any Confederate monuments. Would you say that the legislators that voted for that law should be required to resign because of their support for the lost cause? These people pay fealty to a purely racist past, no matter how much they claim it's not hate but heritage. Yeah, and you know what? I think you can paint. There are instances in which you can paint with a broad brush. I can say that there is something systemically wrong with that district, for instance, in Iowa, that persists in sending a white supremacist to Congress. There is something wrong with the voting majority of that district. And I can say that there's something wrong with the, and is it, you know, it's a feature, not a flaw. These Republicans were put in control of the North Carolina legislature for the first time in a long time for different reasons. But, you know, if some racism and old school Confederate bigotry and hate go along with it, well, it's a price worth paying, they deem, to get the other right-wing horse shit that they were put there to do in the first place. And by the way, we know a little bit more about how those pages were created now. Dr. William Elwood, who was part of the layout team for the 1984 yearbook, was interviewed by CNN, and he said the photos were submitted in a sealed envelope with their name on it to the yearbook staff to be put on their page.
By the students themselves.
Apparently, yes. Now,
which would include Northam.
Yeah. Now, as to Eastern Virginia Medical School, it was only established in 1973. As of right now, it has roughly 1,100 students.
So back then,
11 years after its founding, and its yearbook, its representative memory, is a cesspit of racism. Now, here's the reality of Eastern Virginia Medical School now. They finally do have a vice president of diversity and inclusion, a person by the name of McBib Gameda. And in the past 2 years, they have doubled the number of minority students in the MD program. It's doubled. 20% of the MD students at Eastern Virginia Medical School are now minorities. 20%.
Well, that's a step in the right direction.
It's a step. Well, you know, it's Neil Armstrong stuff. One small step.
Yeah.
But there's no way out of this for Ralph Northam.
No, I don't see him sticking around much longer.
I am going to stand by my thesis that I'm glad he that he troubled the process enough that it gave us time to find out what the real target was, and the real target all along was Justin Fairfax.
Yeah.
Because, okay, remember, Northam is an old Republican. He's one of those who became a Democrat. So I can even imagine some Republicans out there, well, I hate to do this to old Ralphie. He was one of us once upon a time, but daggone, we can't run the risk of letting that Justin Fairfax get any further in his political future.
Yeah. Does anybody know if Doug Wilder, the first black governor of Virginia, has chimed in on this? Because I think as recently as yesterday, I don't think Obama has said one way or another what he thinks ought to happen, which to me is rather odd. But I would be interested to know what Douglas Wilder has to say. He's someone that I've long admired, not only for his tenacity and his who he is as a human being, but also the historic nature of his life. He's still around.
It's interesting, and of course, I'm going to have to shower with bleach after the program now, having just opened this. But I'm looking at a story, the dateline for which is... well, damn it. God, I hate this bullshit about, you're using an ad blocker. Whitelist us.
Yeah.
So it's making it difficult for me to get. But, so apparently, according to the search I just ran, Doug Wilder refused to endorse Ralph Northam.
No, see,
back
that,
during the campaign.
That tells me something right there. And Obama, strangely, didn't he campaign for him as well?
I don't recall.
Okay, we'll leave that there. Listen, I know I want to free up the line for the next person to talk. I just wanted to chime in and say that I'm heartbroken that things never seem to get worked out in my fucking home Commonwealth. But let's cleanse our palate with two quick TV viewing tips.
Okay.
Independent Lens, PBS, go to the website, watch Black Memorabilia. Very interesting, powerful documentary. And that's all I'm going to say about it. You can watch it free on the Independent Lens website. The other is a few bucks for everybody else and free to subscribers at Amazon Prime Video, a documentary also from PBS from last year, The Jazz Ambassadors. That was a lovely film for me on so many levels. A, it had to do with jazz. Basically, in a nutshell, in the wake of the Emmett Till case, we were getting beat up in terms of propaganda by the communist world. So someone at the State Department and the U.S. Information Agency decided to send Dizzy Gillespie, trumpeter Dizzy Gillespie, bebop king Dizzy Gillespie and his little jazz combo to different places around the world to show that, you know, to give black people some face time in terms of the world stage, and to also bring jazz to other parts of the world, because jazz is an American art form by and large, and it didn't stop with Dizzy, but the Jazz Ambassadors. Watch that. If you watch nothing else this week, watch the Jazz Ambassadors on Amazon Prime Video, and watch the Independent Lens film Black Memorabilia. There was an artist featured in Black Memorabilia, a black woman, Alexandria Smith, who I'd never heard of until I saw this film. Looking at her art and listening to her, it touched me in a way that I was compelled to write to her, to let her know, send her an email to let her know how much her words and her life and her art moved me. And I said in the email that I would spread the word about her. And she has a website, alexandriasmith.com, I believe it is. Check out her art. And check out that documentary, because it. And why does Black History Month have to be consigned to the shortest month of the
year?
Yeah,
I asked that the other.
I think they ought to make January. It's not the longest month. It just seems like the longest month. Let's make January Black History Month. Or never mind that. Let's kick off things with Black History Month and then make every month a month about people who have been given the short end of the stick.
Marginalized communities.
Yeah. And God knows there's plenty of them. And it's only.
And there's plenty of history. It's not like you run out.
Oh, no. That's what I'm saying.
Before we go, okay. I did find Doug Wilder's statement.
Okay.
He said, I stated earlier that Governor Northam's continuing in office was his choice to make. It is difficult for anyone who watched the press conference today, last weekend, to conclude that he has any other choice but to resign.
Okay.
Barack Obama's not a Virginian. He lives in D.C. now, but it's not necessary for him to speak. And frankly, it would make things worse. It would.
Yeah, definitely would.
But Eric Holder opined. And he's not running for anything. He said, I have come to know Ralph Northam as a good, very decent man. I regretfully conclude that he does not now have the ability to effectively govern and effectively stand for the issues, moral and political, that Virginia and the nation must confront. The governor should resign. Mayor of D.C. Muriel Bowser. Yeah. If Governor Northam loves Virginia the way I know he does, he will resign to allow the Commonwealth to focus on its place in addressing the history of slavery and racism in America.
Well, all I want him to do, I know that it's inevitable that he's going to have to step aside. I just want his moving on to have some usefulness to it for our side. And I don't mean to make it a sides thing, but it is a sides thing. There's us and them.
Well, I don't know if it can be. I think the most you can hope to do is take a weapon away from the white wingers who are still, why is Mitch McConnell still in the Senate with that Confederate flag photo? Why is Cindy Hyde Smith, who said she wanted to be in the first row at a lynching and posed in a Confederate uniform at Jefferson Davis's mansion, still in the Senate? If you're gonna clean house.
Yeah.
If you stomp a roach on the kitchen floor, you've gotten rid of one roach, but you've still got a shit ton behind the baseboards. If you got one,
well,
you got a thousand.
I'm serious about something good coming of this, Bob, and the fact that we're having the conversation is something good because it's a starting point. But I think back to something that Dave Chappelle said on one of his Netflix specials a year or so ago, talking about, again, the Emmett Till situation, the murder of that young man, and the fact that he was murdered for no good cause based on false testimony, okay? And Dave Chappelle made the point, and I can't put it as eloquently and humorously as he put it, but it was a case of the most horrible thing you can imagine happened with this young man and was seen around the world courtesy of the publishers of, was it Jet or Ebony? It was Jet, okay?
Was it Jet? I thought it was Ebony.
It was one of them, okay? One of those publications. And I can't look at the photo to this day. I've seen it, and it's something that you cannot look at but must, okay? So as with Emmett Till's murder, what came out of that was it ramped up the civil rights actions in this country. What year was Emmett Till? Was it 55?
I don't have the date offhand.
All right. Well, the Montgomery bus boycott, I think, predated it. That was the 50. What I'm saying is it engaged people in a way that they hadn't been engaged before, enough for them to say enough. People got up and started moving in a powerful way. And maybe it was a combination of things, but the point that Dave Chappelle was making was it even the most horrible thing, something can good can later come of it. You know, and sometimes the more horrible it is, the more good you can get out of it. And that's the only hope I've got in terms of Trump. I'm hoping that when all is said and done with Trump, that it marks the end of Republicans in power, by and large, or at least to some degree, because they're utterly irresponsible. They're wickedly irresponsible, and that. It cannot be allowed to continue as it is, because we know better, and we on some level are better, and we need to start acting as if that's the case. I'm surprised, not surprised, but it just amazes me in a way that this whole thing has been as troubling for me on the level that it has been. You're bopping along, minding your own business, and it's like the fucking monster in Alien, the original Alien movie. That fucker clamps on your face, and I want this to be in our face. I want this to be not just a passing topic of conversation, but a motivating irritant, like with an oyster being irritated by a grain of sand. And I want us to get not just a pearl,
you know,
from it,
the whole string and the earrings to match. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying be like me. Bob, quit telling it. Right. But a working knowledge of actual, real, no-kidding history goes an awful long way in helping in a situation like this. And what I mean by that is if you know the history, then the history informs your present. I remember walking around in the neighborhoods of Selma, Alabama. And I think I even corresponded with Dr. John about it at the time. Because history weighs heavily on me. And it goes back, it's kind of like what I said about the way, you know, talking with Tracy last night about, you know, we talk about people who've been dead 100 years like they'll be, you know, like they'll be, you know, coming through the door any minute. Because... Yeah. Their memory is an active part of our present reality. And so walking around Selma, Alabama that day in those neighborhoods, I walked past a place called Sturtevant Hall. It is an antebellum mansion. I think it's Sturtevant Hall. And people go, oh my goodness gracious, isn't it beautiful? Can you just imagine the balls that they had there and the ladies in the gowns? And my head says, can you just imagine the brutal, back-breaking, unpaid labor that went into building that magnificent edifice so that the white folks could have balls and the ladies could wear their lovely gowns?
Yeah, the practice and mindset that made it possible.
And I look at the Capitol of the United States the same way. And I look at the White House the same way. And I look at practically every road in well, I was going to say east of the Mississippi, but it extends further. virtually every road we have starts out as a trail on a brilliantly conceived network of indigenous communications routes, and gets expanded into roads by people whose labor was stolen from them. And exploited by the people who stole the labor to move goods and services around the country in the service of capitalism. I mean, that's not political ideology. Those are historical facts.
Yeah.
It's kind of like saying that Melania Trump is the first lady ever to have accepted money in exchange for removing her clothes so that she could be photographed and her naked body could be looked at and by total strangers.
Yeah.
People may not like that, but not liking it is not the same thing as it not being factual. And racism and slavery and genocide are the factual foundational bases of this country. And it cannot be escaped. And because we can't escape it, we have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's that string of pearls you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. That I forget who originally said it.
It's like Bernie doing his own response to the State of the Union this evening after the African American woman talks. That decision is not playing well with any except the most hardcore of burners, because it reeks of dismissiveness. Well, yeah, sure, she said something, but I've got something else to say.
Well, as much as I love Bernie and even supported him in 2016 during the primary time, I'm sad, and maybe it's possible. I mean, you never know. Life's funny. I just... You know, it's time for him to be a statesman in the Senate. I think that is where he can best serve us. And don't even get me started on the 2020 presidential thing. My mind is not even going there in any serious way for months. I just can't go there. There's too much to do now. And if you don't believe there's too much to do now, read a book, read a paper, read a responsible news website.
And
look around you in your own fucking life. Jesus.
As we move toward the State of the Union this evening, I have one thought in mind, and that is this. If I was a praying person or a believer in some great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, I would be imploring, please, let this be Donald Trump's final State of the Union.
Oh, amen. Amen.
Leave office legally and constitutionally before he can deliver another one. Because, you know, I describe him as this adipose wad of anxieties and hatreds and paranoia. And so lo and behold, there was a pre-State of the Union lunch.
Is this real?
Yes.
Okay.
And he, in talking at lunch, he decided that he wanted to unburden himself of some of his hatred of John McCain. No shit. The guy is dead. In the dirt.
Out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. Nobody... What did he say or do?
There was a lunch for TV anchors. One, why did you fuckers show up?
Yeah.
And he was talking about a book, McCain's book. And he said, by the way,
he wrote a book, and the book bombed.
Then he referred to Chuck Schumer as a nasty son of a bitch. Said Ralph Northam is choking like a dog.
Jesus.
And said he hopes he gets to run against Joe Biden.
Biden was never very smart. He was a terrible student. His gaffes are unbelievable. When I say something that you might think is a gaffe, it's on purpose. It's not a gaffe. When Biden says something dumb, it's because he's dumb.
Jesus. Yeah, let's let this one be the last State of the Union address by Trump. He should have stuck to his showbiz roots and do a telethon and have people pledge a certain amount and they get a brick with their name engraved on it. What? And the bricks will make up the wall.
Oh, and by the way,
if you're going to do the wall, do it that way.
Here's the thing. The White House cited his good genes for why he's orange.
Oh, no.
Got to thinking about that one, too. If it's the case that he has orange skin because he has good genes, that means, at least nominally, he's referring to the melanin content of his skin. Because melanin is what makes you, other than me, pink.
Yeah. You're cotton candy pink, Bob. You're vividly pink.
Pink, pink, pink. So here's what we have to then trace down. So we know his mother was an illegal immigrant who came from a little tiny island community in Scotland where the gene pool was so shallow you couldn't drown a piss ant in it.
Yeah.
But probably not a lot of folks with high melanin content there. So that means his good genes would have to come down his daddy's side, Fred Trump, whose father, remember, you know, Fred was a member of the Klan, but daddy, Grandpa Trump, was a pimp.
Yeah.
So somewhere about it, I'm just saying that, well, I wouldn't want to see his 23andMe.
Well, you talk about, speaking of relatives long deceased as if they only left this afternoon, one can only imagine the stories around the Trump dinner table when young Donnie was coming along about Granddaddy Trump and Daddy Fred Trump and Mother Mary Trump.
I have started a shitstorm.
It's enough to make you choke on your haggis.
At almost the same instant, messages coming from Monique and from Todd.
Yeah.
Subject line, no. Don't you bring that fucking orange shit up. Then, Monique, I'm very high melanin content. We ain't claiming him, Bob. Nope. Just nope right out of that. Mm-mm. Ain't having it. Ain't. No. 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 Just nope.
Well, because what? What shade of orange is Trump? He's dreamsicle, creamsicle orange.
No, he's kind of a University of Texas burnt orange.
Well, he's orange on the outside, blindingly white on the inside. I hope tonight's the night he has the breakdown. It's possible. It could happen on worldwide,
you know, television. if you want to place put a fin on million to one odds that he takes his tears off his clothes and starts playing with himself in public, I could say goodbye to a $5 bill for that.
How great would that be?
Screaming, because the payday would be freaking awesome.
Oh yeah. Running up the aisle, throwing ties and shirts and shoes, jumping, running, tumbling down the Capitol steps, going headlong into one of the fountains. I'd pay to see that.
I want to know who the TV network news anchors were who showed up for that luncheon today.
And it wasn't off the record. I mean, if they're quoting what he said. State of the Union pregame show.
And since it was a luncheon, did he serve them luncheon meat? That would be maybe some pickle and pimento loaf.
Yeah, Big Macs.
Yeah.
And one last thing. What's this thing about unstructured? 60% of his day is unstructured executive time. And old Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, well, he has a different sort of approach. Well, somehow I just can't get my head around different sort of approach as a leader, a different leadership approach. Somehow that just doesn't include for me.
Yeah, but you screwed up the reference. That's White House Press Secretary Jethreen Bodine.
Yeah. But I just, it's like constantly tweeting, devouring buckets of KFC and all the masturbation, metal or otherwise, that you care to engage in. I mean, carry him off. Put him in a coat with very long sleeves and buckles.
You know, fuck you very much for the mental image you just gave me.
Well, I live to serve, Bob. You know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or otherwise.
Yeah. All right, man. Take care.
Thanks.
It's stay strong and keep on. Well, that's the only way out of this.
I've got the mast set up in front of the video screen. Agnes will come in here to lash me to it. She'll put the beeswax in her ears, and then I'll deal with the State of the Union.
Good luck with it.
Hell of a night to quit. Hell of a night. I chose a hell of a night to quit sniffing glue.
There you go. Take care, man.
All right. See you, Scott. Later.
Bye.
Scott in San Diego. Let's see. Just a little bit of time left in the program this evening. I've been trying to read up on this luncheon. The New York Times report says, energized and blunt, Mr. Trump held a little back during the lunch at the White House. Energized. I think maybe a slightly less coy publication would have said, blasted out of his mind on a few morning rails of Adderall. Mr. Trump held a little back. He seemed confident about his chances for re-election next year, breaking down the emerging field of possible opponents with scathing assessments and predicting that Democrats would move so far to the left that it would make it easier for him to win a second term. I hope I haven't wounded Pocahontas too badly. I'd like to run against her. Yeah. Not every target was a Democrat, the Times reports. He recounted again the story of what he considered Senator John McCain's betrayal in voting against advancing a measure to repeal President Barack Obama's health care program. Although Mr. McCain has since died, Mr. Trump remains upset. And that's where the, by the way, he wrote a book and the book bombed. Well, fuck. Everybody with two brain cells to rub together knows that he didn't write his book. He is barely literate. But there's no reporting here from the Times on who the television news anchors were who showed up to kiss his hairy toe. And shame on them for going. You know, there's a reason we refer to him as Geezer Disgustus and Julius Geezer. That's the kind of behavior, you know, you call the captive press in to show off and berate them. Jesus Christ. Well, if anybody... Terrace says, Governor racist and President racist are our avatars. Show me any whole person and I'll show you someone who is a little more than half racist. So long as we have to have white male leaders, we will have racist representation that accurately represents the electorate. At least the Virginian governor says he has no hate in his heart, just stupidity. On the other hand, all Republicans hate everyone, especially women, says a white man. Never mind. That Bill in PA says, Donnie, and this was about 2 minutes ago, Donnie just left the White House. Well, you keep going. Meanwhile, Michael in Madison says, come on, Bob, he ain't really orange. Didn't you see this? It's science, and it's nightmarish. I did see that. To visualize Trump's natural appearance, a while back tried matching the rest of his artificially tanned face to the natural skin color around his eyes. Ugh. That looks almost corpse-like. Thanks for the visual, Michael, and thanks for the sour persimmons, brother. Who was at the who showed up for the luncheon? Well, courtesy of the ad hoc research department of the Horn, in this instance, being Steve from Georgistan, moderating in the chat room, PBS's Judy Woodruff, C-SPAN's Steve Scully, CBN News's David Brody, and Fox News's Chris Wallace and Martha McCallum were all expected to attend Tuesday's gathering, among others. No Lester Holt? How about that? No George Snuffleupagus? Yeah, Chris Wallace would have to show up. That would be probably a fireable offense if he said, yeah, no thanks. As Monique points out, and yet, dummy Meghan McCain says, he's our president. Anyone talks about my father like he does, I'd be getting a knock from the Secret Service for verbal content. Well, as long as the check clears, right? I guess that's Meghan McCain's operative. Yep, Secret Service. Jesus. Well, are you all settled in? About 13 minutes before the damn thing starts. Yeah, Arnold on Bernie trying to upstage Stacey Abrams. I think the term mansplaining's bullshit, but that's what Bernie's doing. I love Bernie, but not tonight. I don't know why that's such a difficult concept, but it apparently is. And so, by the way, fundraising, what we do to keep the program on the air, we stand at $353.94. That will become $553.94 by tomorrow for prayer meeting Wednesday. And the deacons may have gotten the night off, but they're going to be working their ass off tomorrow, that's for sure. Oh, now here's an idiot. So CNN, This is just one of those media things. And by the way, I have a feeling it's going to get really interesting, the investigation into the inauguration committee. Because it too was just another Trump grift. By the way, the Trump Organization, we now know by virtue of released documents, cuddled up to Putin real close trying to get Trump Tower Moscow built. And there's a guy named Tom Barrack, and he was the chairman of the inaugural committee. And the investment firm that he founded worked up a scheme whereby it would profit from its connections to the administration and foreign dignitaries. WNYC and ProPublica obtained the confidential memo. Over at MSNBC, Nicole Wallace has reported that for months now, Trump has been worried as hell about the trial in the Senate once he, presuming that he gets impeached, and he's trying to make sure that he keeps the Republicans in line. To vote against removing him from office. Almost makes you wonder if maybe he's somebody's shown him those emails that were stolen from the RNC by the Russians and not released by WikiLeaks. Yeah. But you remember Jack Kingston? This is a fun one. CNN finally booted him. From being one of their talking heads. And no sooner was he gone from CNN than zing! He shows up on MSNBC being interviewed by Ari Melber. And then this happened. He decided to attack Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Which we know from the public record. I want to, for your response, get AOC up on the screen. She posted about this after our report, among others, last night. And she said, look, quote, Netflix and chill is not a management style, basically accusing the president of watching TV or Netflix and not working. And since our viewers care about all sides and you're a Trump surrogate, what is your response to this? And wait, let me finish the question. I know it's a long one. I'm a lawyer. Surely you can't say that this is normal presidential scheduling. Your response.
All right, let me say, number one, here we have a 29-year-old coffee barrister telling a man who's made billions of dollars running management in enterprises, investments, and real estate all over the globe, but she's going to tell him how to manage
world. Well, sir, she's not being quoted today based on the fact that she worked in retail or in service. She's being quoted as a member of Congress, the same title of yours. Do you not give her the same respect to the title you held?
I'd say when it comes to managing and running affairs and running big corporations, I'm going to go with Donald Trump over somebody who doesn't have a track record of anything outside of Congress. But let me say this. We don't know. I think some of this is just this picky stuff that one more reason to get mad at Donald Trump. Jimmy Carter, as we all know, was a... Pollock. Look at that economy. Ronald Reagan was accused of napping, yet look at the peace and the prosperity that we enjoyed under him. Barack Obama, we as Republicans criticized for playing too much golf, but, I think he was an effective president.
Well, the records show that, for example, Trump plays more golf than Obama did, so does that concern you?
I'm just saying that we criticized Obama for playing golf, but I think for those people who... Why don't they just really talk about real issues like Medicare for all at a $7 trillion price tag? How are they going to pay for it? Or if they're worried about the president having too much downtime, why don't they get an appointment with him and go over there and talk to him about how to?
Jesus Christ! They just can't resist, can they? No, they can't. As Monique points out. They want her so bad, real talk. That's all it is. If she doesn't matter, why do they keep talking about her? And by the way, Jack Kingston is apparently not a member of Mensa. He referred to her as a 29-year-old barrister. He meant barista. He means somebody that works at Starbucks. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was a bartender, not a barista. And she certainly doesn't run around with a silly wig on her head like barristers do back in merry old Engeland. Nope. So, yeah. It's damned interesting to watch the conniptions that these right-wing freaks get themselves into. And no, he's not a successful billionaire. He's a grifter. He's a hustler. And anybody who is real money in New York has nothing to do with him. Because they know he's a con artist. Oh, well, thank you, Monique. Says, give yourself a cowbell. Thank you, Monique. I will cherish it. And Tracy adds in, and this will be pretty much the last word for the evening, STFU Bernie and let Stacey Abrams shine challenge. Whoa, okay. As much as I appreciate Bernie Sanders, I am pissed the fuck off that he's going to steal Stacey, the real governor of Georgia, Abrams' thunder. It just shows the constant disrespect black women have to endure at the hands of those Melman-challenged consumers of Haterade. Whoa. Time out. Melanin-challenged consumers of Haterade. So in her honor, I want to throw down the aforementioned challenge in Stacey Abrams' honor, $20. So if somebody will match Tracy's $20, that'll take us down to $313.94. $313.94 with a $20 challenge on the table for the last couple of minutes of the program. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so very much. All right. Where do we go for the last? No, that's prayer meeting Wednesday stuff. How about a little note from home? Home being here, West Virginia. Last night, we had the story of the racists in the Emergency Operations Command. Well, out of Cabell County, West Virginia, via WSAZ-TV, Cabell County borders Kentucky over the Big Sandy River. It's Huntington is the county seat. That's where Marshall University is. But there's also a community there called Barbersville, West Virginia. Five members of the Barbersville Volunteer Fire Department have been dismissed and are now facing felony charges because these firemen apparently did not fully understand the meaning of their occupation, or their volunteer occupation. Charles Weybrecht Chase Peoples, age 20, is charged with second-degree arson burning of other buildings or structures. 20-year-old Brett Allen Ray is charged with first-degree arson. Glenn Fletcher Harmon, 20, charged with burning, etc. of other buildings or structures. That's second-degree arson. Travis Michael Bailey, 28, is charged with first-degree arson. And Ian Hockenberry, 21, is charged with first-degree arson. Those arrests were made today. And the state fire marshal said that the investigation has been going on since early December after it turned out that they were burning stuff as far back as like April 7th, 2017, a home on the Guyane River Road in Barboursville, West Virginia. It was a single-story home made from wood and burnt. And the Hockenberry defendant said, yeah, he set the fire because, wait for it, he wanted to be able to respond with the Barboursville Volunteer Fire Department. Barboursville Volunteer Fire Department also responded to a garage apartment fire in December 2017. The roof was collapsing, fully engulfed in fire. And, well, they set the fire so that they could then go and put the fire out. Hillbillies. Oh, dear. So that's it for the evening. Thank you so kindly to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. There is a $20 challenge right now, courtesy of Tracy. It is the STFU Bernie and Let Stacey Abrams Shine Challenge. And we'll see how that plays out. Now it's time for me to do this thing I do not want to do. And watch the State of the Union. Damn. And I'm all out of Thorazine darts. Son of a gun. Well, just the same. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.